We're going to have a discussion. Welcome, everybody. We're going to have a discussion on macro accounting for macro heading.
Okay. I'm going to kick off with agenda paper 4A, which is portfolio revaluation approach through other comprehensive income. When discussing the scope of application of the portfolio revaluation approach in May 2013 board meeting, some questioned whether the recognition of volatility from unhedged positions in the profit and loss provides useful information on dynamic, holistic risk management. At the same time, the potential general usefulness of that information was also recognised. Mindful of this, the agenda paper contains an alternative application of the portfolio revaluation approach, whereby the net revaluation effect from the revaluation of the managed exposures and the fair value of hedging instruments are recognised in OCI rather than profit or loss. The objective of the paper is to raise the possibility of using OCI in this way and the potential consequences of doing so for inclusion in the discussion paper. The proposal for the portfolio revaluation approach through OCI would result in the same information set being provided in the financial statements as previously discussed by the board. However, the profit or loss would only reflect the impact of dynamic risk management activity has had on net interest income for the reporting period, with the effect on future net interest income to be recognised in OCI. There is no proposed change to the balance sheet measurement as a result of this approach. The proposal to use OCI rather than profit or loss for the revaluation effect is more than just a presentational change. There are a number of practical and conceptual issues that need to be deliberated before the proposal could be considered as a viable solution. These include the following. The proposal breaks an assumption that we have been using so far that all risk management instruments will remain at fair value through P&L. The treatment of internal derivatives may need to be changed or reconsidered. Natural recycling from OCI into profit or loss will not occur if managed exposures are sold or hedging instruments are closed out. And there is also a question whether all fair value changes in non-derivative hedging instruments would be taken to OCI as a result of this, or whether it would be just those relating to the managed risk, for example, interest rate risk. There's also a question about the consistency of this approach with the proposals that are being developed in the conceptual framework discussion on the purpose of OCI. Furthermore, preparers are likely to weigh up the benefit of this approach in conjunction with the impact on prudential capital measures, i.e. the effect in OCI may be equivalent to a profit or loss treatment for regulatory capital purposes. Considering the proposals within the conceptual framework discussion paper, perhaps it could be argued that the recognition of the revaluation effect of the portfolio revaluation approach through OCI enhances the usefulness of information in profit or loss. However, solutions to the practical issues mentioned above would also need to be identified, and these solutions may significantly increase the operational complexity of the approach. With that, I turn it over to the board.
Amar.
Yeah, thanks. Maybe a general comments on the paper. I think it's going in the right direction as a discussion paper is envisaged to gather more information about the macro hedge. There are two aspects only that I've already made comments to Jane, but I think I'd like to make in general. I think it's important for us during this process, either before or even soon after the discussion paper is issued, to gather more feedback from other industries, not only the bank industry, because the bank industry is aware and I believe can contribute quite significantly because of the way we are developing the project. It's natural. But also, I would like to understand more about how the other industries perceive that, and also users. We use language such as holistic, dynamic risk management. So this type of language, when we ought to put in a standard, in an accounting standard, we should be very clear about what we mean by this dynamic risk management. And also, when it comes to disclosures and other aspects of the project, to consider the relationship that we have, we will do that, but be aware the type of requirement we do already have in IFRS 7 when it comes to qualitative disclosure and types of risk management. But I think we are in the right direction in terms of trying to be open to ideas and capture our other industries' view.
It's a little bit along the lines of what Maura said. I think there are compelling reasons for me why OCI makes sense in certain circumstances, and particularly in the case here where we're looking at the profit and loss effect of positions that are captured through the holistic approach, but which are not actually being hedged at the particular point in time. Because in essence, we've already got an IFRS 9, which looking at those particular exposures has concluded that the most useful information to present in profit and loss is amortized cost. So I think there is an underlying logic as to why OCI makes sense in the circumstance. I think if we went out with a discussion paper that didn't discuss OCI, I think people would be coming back to us and suggesting it as a solution for this. At the same time, I think a lot of there are a lot of reasons why OCI is going to be particularly difficult here. And I think one of them is the fact that we're kind of using it as a catch-all. So it's catching things where my compelling case exists, but it's catching many things where my compelling case doesn't. Where we would argue normally those should be to profit and loss. So I think being able to air all of those through the discussion paper makes a lot of sense. And I think the discussion paper needs to show both sides of it, why we think it might make sense in a holistic view, but also the reasons why it overcomplicates the model potentially and why it potentially captures the wrong information in OCI.
Are you going?
No, I have two comments. One is I like the Amaro's suggestions and to investigate non-banking sectors. But of course, I know that our plan is to publish DP focus on banking. And the reason why I follow what Amaro said, you know, when we had, you know, the general hedging outreach in Shanghai and Beijing, some of the corporations, they like our model very much, you know, because in the past they don't allowed to do so, the general hedging model. But after that, you know, a lot of feedback come back. That is, you know, even in corporate, big corporations, they will normally manage their risk, not on individual basis. And they have very similar structure, like internal, you know, management, and have a separate ones in charge of the hedging with outsiders, but also has some internal management angles, and also they mentioned, you know, it's related to their internal transfer pricing and the standard costing. I'm not sure other company are doing so. Maybe Gary can tell us, you know. Most of big corporations, they have internal, you know, transfer pricing and the standard costing system. And the ideas, to some extent, you know, it's related to the objective of doing so. It's very similar to the macro hedging as we are discussing. I remember about more than 1 year ago when another Martin, was here to discuss with us. We discussed about the objectives and others. And most of the objectives of macro hedging here we are developing is very similar to the standard costing and internal transfer pricing. So my question or my request is, when you want to ask, I'm not sure whether in this stage or next stage, ask the views from corporates, you should ask them the relationship between the things we are now developing and with their so-called standard costing and internal pricing system. And we should be very careful. The reason why we should be very careful is because traditionally financial reporting, external financial reporting, you know, ignore the internal pricing and the standard costing. And but if the incorporate, they have such kind of systems mingle with the things we are developing and the stand costing and the transfer pricing system, I'm not sure, you know, how we should lay down the principle. And second, it relates, I still not fully understand, even from this morning's discussion about recycling. And for me, you know, anything presented in OCI without recycling is just a subtotal. And it's hard to deny, you know, to lay down something in a, under a subtotal, it will not be useful or provide more information. I would say, without recycling, you know, a little bit more subtotal will be very useful. But I'm not sure exactly the recycling side of the proposal.
Christian?
Well, I there's a lot of questions in my mind about whether or not OCI will provide useful information. And looked at macro hedging in isolation, it seems to be useful and helpful, but there are all the knock-on effects that the staff has pointed out in the paper. And to me, and it did, what it really is the complexity that it will layer on when you think of accounting for financial instruments in total. IFRS 9 is already going down a road where there'll be three ways to account for financial instruments. There'll be amortized cost, fair value through P&L, fair value OCI. In addition, you have own credit going into OCI when you revalue a liability if you elect it. The fair value option for the liability. And then on top of that, we're going to layer management's risk management activity, which is then going to result in some of those things that would have been under regular IFRS 9 now coming into OCI as well. It just seems to me that it's going to be awfully confusing for financial statement users to figure out unless there's a lot of disclosure to help them untangle it. And disclosures, as we know, are getting very voluminous and aren't always as clear as they could be. So I have a lot of concerns about the usefulness of OCI. I also have some questions about whether the use of OCI in this instance is really consistent with the development of the concept of OCI in the conceptual framework. That being said, I strongly support the notion of putting the discussion into the discussion paper. Let me just finish my last thought, which is I do strongly support putting the discussion of the use of OCI in the discussion paper with all the problems that we see in the pros and cons, because I think that'll help constituents informing their own views and giving us information that may inform us and may make it more palatable at the end. But right now I'm not convinced.
Stephen?
So can I ask about examples 1 and 2, pages 13 and 14? So in each of these two examples, we've got exactly the same.
One and two.
In the appendix, 4A appendix.
Yeah.
So in each of these two examples, we've got exactly the same numbers, but the revaluation effects, instead of being in profit and loss, are in OCI. So the disaggregation that's in example one, if we were not to use OCI, is that the disaggregation and the form of presentation that we would envisage as a result of this project?
Yeah.
The split between net interest from dynamic risk management and the revaluation effect, therefore, is affected by internal derivatives.
Yes.
But
within P&L.
But we're confident that this disaggregation is meaningful. I think it is. I think you get a net interest income modified for the effect of the dynamic hedging activities. it's a meaningful reflection on a flow basis of the interest that is generated from that portfolio. The revaluation effect is also meaningful because it largely reflects the unhedged portion of that risk. It's the revaluation effect. Why does it suddenly become not meaningful if you put the revaluation effect in OCI? Now, I understand that profit and loss is special. And if profit and loss is special, then you might be more uncomfortable about internal derivatives affecting profit or loss. But we've got this disaggregation here, and exactly the same disaggregation if we were to use OCI. It's exactly the same numbers. The only difference is the label that we give to the subtotals. So in example one, we have a subtotal of profit before revaluation effect of dynamic risk activities. And in the OCI example, that's called profit or loss, but it's the same disaggregation. So I don't see why one is good and the other one's bad.
I think it's the P&L is special.
That's the only real reason, isn't it? P&L is special.
And that's where...
That's
the first place people would look to get this information,
sure.
I think.
Sure, and that's the problem that we have. Because we regard P&L as special, it creates this barrier to disaggregation. So I guess this links in with the conceptual framework and what we're trying to do with P&L.
Yeah, and I guess to the point that somebody raised earlier, one of the things we'd be wanting to do during the comment period for the discussion paper would be getting feedback from people on whether or not, you know, the information is useful and what effect having it in OCI versus P&L would be.
Just to go back to the example one and the disaggregation. The disaggregation that you've done within this example, would we mandate the calculation that lies behind that disaggregation?
The way that this is, are you talking about the difference between net interest from dynamic risk management and the revaluation effect?
Yes.
I think you would recognise, I think it would need to be some kind of mandation as to how that would occur. I think for most instruments it would be very, very natural. It would be similar to the accrual on the exposures as well, looking at the coupons that are on the on the risk management derivatives. There might be some more guidance that might be required for risk management instruments that don't actually have a coupon.
Yeah.
But I think any kind of mandate, I think, would be in keeping with normal interest in income and expense kind of recognition rules.
Yeah. Can I ask a couple more? So this revaluation effect, in this particular example, it's a holistic view, so everything's being revalued. If we were to apply this model by portfolio, those numbers get smaller.
Yep.
And if we apply it by portion of portfolio, the portion that we hedge, they get smaller still. In fact, they get close to zero. Is that right?
They could be, yeah.
What would be left behind, I think, is the extent to which the objective of the hedging strategy hasn't been successfully achieved. And that would probably be the number that we appropriately think should be in profit and loss. Certainly I do.
So
The problem is that what is going through there at the moment, or what is left in that number at the moment, if you go to the other end of your scale, is the extent to which you never intended trying to hedge in the first place.
So if we were, I thought, you've told me before, that it's not possible to split out the ineffectiveness from the unhedged.
It's very difficult to.
But when I just described it as do it by portfolio, part of portfolio you hedge, then Daryl described the resulting number as the ineffectiveness bit.
And I think the reason, personally I think the reason is, sorry I'm now, but the reason is, or the reason we don't necessarily want to go down the route of the individual portfolios is because that is a far more complicated way to do it. It has the benefit of meaning that you isolate the specific issue, but it adds far more complexity to this model in terms of the way you're tracking, the individual tracking that you need to do, and et cetera.
So this is
that becomes the things that we're weighing up.
This is the simpler way of doing it.
Holistic.
But it has the unpalatable effect that you get the revaluation of the unhedged position in the P&L.
Yeah. Can I jump in here? It's because this is
I think what Steve is saying and what Daryl is touching on is what I want to say, is that we are left with two alternatives here. One is the tracking issue that Daryl is talking about, if you go down the portfolio on the portions effect. The second issue is the holistic view. Then we have to deal with unpalatable accounting issues that are in conflict with several other areas of our accounting, including IFRS 9. Although Tom corrected it, it's not a macro hedging, it's a macro accounting. Still, it conflicts with the fair value accounting that we have described in the general hedging model. So I think in order to promote good behavior and see if banks or the financial institutions or corporates who want to develop the systems, I think my suggestion would be something along the lines Steve is touching on, is that if you are able to do portions or if you are able to do the portfolios in a much more granular way, you don't need to do holistic view. Holistic view is done if you want to bypass that work and do it in a whole manner, then the effects of an unhedged portion should go into the income statement. This is very similar to the logic we have used in the fair value option for liabilities in the IFRS 9 or IAS 39, wherein if you don't do the bifurcation that is needed to separate the liability into its derivative component and its host component, we said you can choose to do the whole thing as a fair value option, but run it through income statement. We never said in that situation to run it through OCI. And so my logic is very similar to that, that if you are able to do portion, if you can develop systems to do that, you may not be here today, but few years from now, if you are given that incentive, you will do that, then you will your risk management is reflected in your financial statements. And if your risk management does not, your systems do not track your risk management, then it should be an income statement.
You get just a lack of comparability as a result.
You get lack of comparability, but at the same time, the people who are doing it, it's the same thing with the fair value option for the liabilities. If you can do it, you can do it. If you not, do the whole thing. The advantage of that is that you do not need to expand OCI. You do not need to deal with the unpalatable decisions that come along with the OCI that has a lot of reservations. I agree with the Jane's views. Perhaps we can fit it with our discussion paper in OCI, but I have reservations whether it meets all the requirements that are there in our discussion paper for qualifying into OCI. So I think touching OCI just to get rid of this 10% is a pretty blunt tool and might not get to the, and we are ever expanding the OCI without really understanding or encouraging good behavior, I would say.
Can I just add one thing, sort of not directly following from PK's but related? I think we need to be a bit careful about the throwing around this word unpalatable, because I think there are some, I think maybe some around the board table, but also others who would say that having the full remeasurement through P&L holistically provides lots of really useful information that should be in P&L. And that's sort of one valid perspective. So I think that the way we've been thinking about the discussion paper so far is the starting proposition is the revaluation approach is an approach where the effects are reflected in P&L. A variant of that is, okay, to go through P&L, but not holistically, but instead to look at sort of scoping it more specifically to portfolios or sub-portfolios. And then another approach would be, if that's too complex or for other reasons, if you still want a holistic perspective, to look at applying it holistically, but to consider OCI as an alternative and or to consider disclosures to complete the picture. So I think we should be a bit careful about thinking that.
You know, when I said unpalatable, though, I'm talking about unpalatable of OCI for me, not unpalatable to the income statement. It's unpalatable of OCI. Let me be very clear.
According to Tess.
Martin?
Well, I think there is also another element, because man, if you would say, okay, this ineffectiveness or the imprecision of hedge accounting then is in OCI, I mean, then people who also use derivatives to hedge, if it is interest risk or other risk, they would come and say, if I'm doing that but don't use hedge accounting, I have all the derivative mark-to-market P&L in, well, volatility in P&L, but if I'm doing hedge accounting, even if I do not perfectly hedge, I have my P&L then based on accrued basis, and I have can move all this volatility in UCI. And I would assume that people would say, if you allow that in macro hedging, why don't you, even if I don't do any hedging, have then the volatility out of the derivatives in UCI? And that, I think, is a danger if we go this route. And I agree we should maybe in the discussion paper we should have that, because people will ask that question, and better is to have the discussion now instead of later, that I would also be not a friend of doing that in Louisiana.
Yes, I think for this project to be holistic is very important. So I have a different view with PK. Hearing from what the PK was saying, it sounds to me our proposal could be quite similar to fair value option, but that is not what we are going to achieve. What we are going to achieve is we would like to change the concept of hedging itself. And in the case of general hedge, hedging itself is a special transaction. And having a financial instrument like a derivative is a special thing. But if you are really hedging, you have to check whether it is really hedging. So that is the concept of general hedge. But in our model, we do not really care whether you are really hedging or not. So we do not really care what is the proportion of unhedged portion. But instead, what we do care is what is the holistic risk position of that bank, and what is the proper margin level of that bank. So in this sense, so what we are proposing is not a part of the hedging accounting, but we are saying just proposing a new accounting for dynamic risk management, accounting for holistic dynamic risk management. So I think it's holistic is the key. But in order to achieve the holistic approach, we need some compromise, and that is the OCI. As Jane said, because net income is very important portion, important performance criteria, so we keep it stable. However, we would like to show the whole picture of bank's risk management. Then we go to OCI. That is what staff is proposing. So therefore, we should include it in the discussion paper.
Can I just say something to Tom?
Yeah.
Because he took my name. The point I want to make, though, in macro accounting, I don't think, Jane, correct me if I'm having a senior movement here. I'm not referring to you, Ian. can you tell me, we have not concluded or we have not put up even in the discussion paper whether macro hedging should be compulsory or mandatory or it should be an option. We haven't touched on that issue yet.
That was something that was discussed as part of the scope discussion in May, but there was no conclusion on it. So in the discussion paper, that is going to be something that we were going to welcome feedback on.
Yeah. So if macro hedging is macro accounting, to use your wording, is not mandatory for everybody, the comparability issue that you said is not there.
Yeah, that's a crucial point.
So I think the holistic is those people who choose to do it, I think that's a little bit pushing down.
I understand. And just coming back to Weigel's point, I think a standard costing argument is very interesting argument, and this is very important argument, because what we are achieving is general purpose financial statements, not for the internal purposes financial statements. Having said that, in my takeaway, I think in this project, what we are going to achieve is not just to achieve standard costing or standard margin. Not only that, but also we are trying to achieve what is the risk profile of the bank or some other entity who has a significant risk. So in the case of standard costing, we are really focusing on what is the proper level of margin or proper level of gross profit. But in this project, our main focus is rather on depicting the risk profile of the bank or some entity who has significant risk management.
Can I explain a little bit? You know, when we went to Shanghai, the oil gas company tell us roughly, you know, assume a very big oil gas company operates in different locations, even in abroad. But if you look at, they say, if you look at individual entity or segment, they all face, you know, risk.
Mm.
But the company will not, you know, manage risk by this way. You know, what they told us is the company will have a national audit at corporate level to, just like the asset liability management approach. And they will come together and see maybe A division have a price like this, D division the opposite. And they will match them together or balance them together. And by the end, the company will decide, you know, overall rate will only charge necessarily 5%, you know. And internally, they will use, like standard called the internal transfer pricing, to label the margin, and they don't feel any problem. So only the net amount they will hedge. So this is some kind of relationship.
Chang Wu?
Thank you. Two minor questions, one to Yuji and one to Jane. First for Jane is, what is the typical hedge ratio nowadays? They are doing a 100% macro hedge, or maybe some less than 100%.
I think there's probably a lot of variation. I think it's difficult for banks to hedge absolutely 100%, but I think there's some that kind of aim close to that, perhaps. But I think there's a number that intentionally leave an element unhedged.
In the small group, I suggest one explanation might be if they don't hedge 100%, then they might think this must be in a measured some other way. But if we apply holistic approach, portfolio evaluation approach, you have to apply all fair value. So if they intentionally unhedge some portion of the portfolio, then you might think maybe this kind of alternative accounting. So it seems to me it looks much fairer than the other, the previous methods and all fair value change in P&L. So how about the such kind of argument? It's a kind of a cost of hedging, I mean.
I mean, I think I'm not sure it's a cost of hedging. It's more kind of the current value of the risk management activity today. So I think it's slightly different to cost of hedging.
Yeah, there's no cash flow cost of hedging, but I'm saying, you know, kind of in terms of accounting treatment, there is a kind of cost of hedging because they have to apply all fair value through P&L. If you are going to use portfolio evaluation approach for all unit of portfolio. So that's why I'm concerned. Think about it. The next question on the TUD. This approach is a quite special P&L concept. So I'm wondering whether this OCI approach is a suggest from Japan?
Yeah. Not really. Actually, what all of the staff, Jay and I and Sue, had thought in the last meeting in May was that through the many outreaches staff have implemented in March and April, as I told you in May, what I found was that at least some of the users, I'm not saying all of users, but at least some of the users I met strongly supported the holistic approach, holistic P&L approach. Because some of the users are more interested in the at the end of the day, too much extent each bank is exposed to interest rate risk. So they are not necessarily interested in the to what extent each hedging is successful or not. Rather, they are more interested in holistically to what extent the, each bank is exposed to the interest rate risk. Hence, the staff had thought at least a holistic approach should be one of the alternatives that should be included in the discussion paper. However, at the same time, we understood that that approach wouldn't be, unfortunately, would not be popular among entities, especially banks, because banks naturally believe that holistic approach does not necessarily correctly reflect their actual risk management, because they tend to focus on, you know, net interest margin in each period. Because holistic approach, the essence of the holistic P&L approach is to show the risk in the future net interest income as a revaluation in this period. Banks, some of the banks don't necessarily believe this is really reflecting their actual risk management. Hence, the staff thought the another approach explore another approach which achieve to reflect the actual risk management in banks. At the same time, that would be naturally chosen by banks themselves. So this is the reason why we have thought about the possibility of a holistic OCI approach. So that means it is not just the voice of particular Japanese banks.
OCI is popular around the world. But it seems to me that the business model of these banks is to manage not only their interest exposure for this year, but also for future years, and that's why they have these derivatives that cover several years. And it would only be logical, I think, that if you do hedge most of your portfolio, but you on purpose, and it's a part of your business model to leave part of the portfolio unhedged, then you should show the effects of that portfolio. And it would be extremely logical to have it go through P&L.
Well, why not disclosure?
I'm surprised.
I'm not saying it's my view.
No.
Well, there are some interpretations, I think. One of the views is that...
Let me finish. But it seems to me equal treatment for both portions of the portfolio.
Agreed.
What is the problem here, of course, is that those banks who do not hedge anything at all, yeah, who are exposed to the same risks, but live in the happy bliss of amortized cost, don't show any short-term volatility, whereas their portfolios might be extremely exposed. And so those poor banks that do the good job and hedge feel disadvantaged relative to their competitors who do not hedge because of this small, uncovered, unhedged part of their portfolio.
Yeah, but that problem comes because we have given them a choice whether to show it or not show it. If you remove that, then
well, we have to think about that.
Yeah.
We have to think about that. But I think we have to make it very clear to them. And it is not their business model to hedge only 90% of their portfolio and not be at all interested in the future interest exposure of the unhedged portion. They just think it's too expensive, or that there are natural hedges normally, and they just decide not to do so. But it's not as if for that smaller portion of the unhedged portion that there is suddenly a completely different economics or a different business model. It's all part of the same business model, so I think we should make that very clear in the note. I mean, OCI could be an out, you know, the usual compromise, but I think the note that I've, your paper makes it very clear there are enormous complexities and truly unpalatabilities involved. But it needs to be dealt with in the discussion paper. But I think it's the problem is the you know, if the rest of the world would be on full hedging or full fair value, then they wouldn't have this problem, but they would feel disadvantaged towards vis-a-vis the other banks that do not apply this partial fair value technique, which is macro hedging.
And I understand all that, but I think if we will go into this direction, if you say, okay, we want to show really the interest rate risk banks have, and that we want to recognize on the balance sheet, I think we don't discussing hedge accounting, we're discussing maybe then IFRS 9, C and M again, but not hedge accounting. And I think we have, at one point, we have to decide what we want to do, because then we go totally different direction.
Yeah, but that's not what I'm proposing.
Okay. But if we make it mandatory to, then it's different.
Mary?
Same question about how we would present this alternative approach of holistic view via OCI. Thinking about discussion paper, when we did the conceptual framework, in some areas we had a preliminary view of the board. Are we thinking of character of just saying we don't know which way to go, holistic P&L, holistic OCI, or potentially exploring ways to identify slices of portfolio? Or are we planning to go preliminary view, holistic P&L, because we have heard some of the concerns about P&L volatility from the unhedged proportion of the managed risk. We also have explored but have concerns about OCI and, you know, holistic OCI, and that's why it's not our preference. Have we thought about the characterization of this is our initial thinking about the way forward, but we're also exploring these, or just a level voice on all of them?
I mean, I think the plan, the current plan for the discussion paper is to start off with explaining what the portfolio revaluation approach through P&L is. Mm-hmm. And then I think we would go on to talk about the, you know, I think the starting point would be an holistic application, and therefore the benefit of some of the, you know, the transparency of information that that provides. But then I think we'd need to recognise, as you say, some of the scope difficulties of that holistic application, and then we would talk about could it be applied on a more portfolio or sub-portfolio basis. And then I think one of the things we want to get information on, to get feedback on, is, you know, how might that work on a, if it's not holistic. Because I think it's quite easy to say let's just do it on sub-portfolios, but I think how that actually could work on a day-to-day basis, I think is quite important. And I think the way that might work, you know, could go down a route of lots of operational complexity, or maybe not. I think then we would also recognise the issue of the unhedged positions in P&L, and the reasons we're talking about today as to why that's not popular. And then we could talk about the, you know, the alternative of OCI, and within that we definitely have to put all the pros and cons of that approach.
Well, because overall I think it's like, I think basically everybody who's spoken today, better to have it in the paper than dismiss it here at the table and not put it in the paper, because I think we'll get more meaningful, structured, thoughtful input to have it in. But I think if we have views, we should be expressing them, and if we don't, we should be clear that we don't.
I think it should definitely be the case that the OCI would be seen as secondary to the alternatives that use P&L, and I think it should be presented that way.
Is that the view of the board?
That was my sense. I think that the preference would be through P&L, but I think we acknowledge the challenges that come with a holistic application, so we can see why being more specific in the scope could be a better way to go, but I think we also acknowledge the operational complexities of that. So I think one of the main things I'd like to get across in the discussion paper is please don't just come back and say we want, you know, specific scope. Come back and tell us how to do that in a way that you can deal with operationally.
But we haven't taken, we've taken very few decisions in this project. We haven't even decided on a holistic view. We've only really decided on it isn't fair value and it isn't
cost. Which is why I think my sense would be that OCI would probably be secondary, but I'm not sure that I could prioritise holistic versus narrower scope.
No, I don't think we should express the board's preliminary view is on anything other than we want to explore a revaluation approach.
Yes. I agree with Steve, and I think if the board was to express a preliminary view, it would be presented, it would have to be presented in the context of a model that would be optional and not mandatory. Because I'm very, very fearful of a model being optional and not mandatory. Because I'm very fearful of a public reaction saying, ah, here they come back with a full fair value model through PNL, which clearly we have said we no longer pursue that idea. But if we have a revaluation model, full fair value of this balance sheet position through PNL or through OCI, is that model being mandatory? Well, yeah, well, again.
And with expected loss for the impairment, and then you have level 3 fair value for Matasco. And that's what it is.
Yeah. And of course, the practice is that many banks do manage their portfolio in a fair value way, or almost complete fair value way, except for credit risk and. But this whole interest risk management is a type of fair value management.
But are you saying that you would want OCI presented as being equally palatable?
No. I think we should clearly mention the shortcomings that Jane's paper and UG's paper has, clearly mention the difficulties very prominently. While there is no leaning on the board has talked about these shortcomings and also talked about the operationally, can you track it and things like that which we need to elicit. And I think we should have a balanced responses from other constituents other than affected parties here. We should strive to get comments from other groups.
Move on to the next paper. Paper 4B on disclosures. This paper now considers the disclosures that would support the proposed accounting solution for macro hedging. The disclosures could further enhance users' understanding of both an entity's dynamic risk management activity and how the portfolio revaluation approach has been applied in the financial statements. We would like to include an analysis of potential disclosures in the discussion paper so we can obtain feedback from users on the usefulness of the proposed information on the dynamic risk management, also from preparers on the feasibility and cost of obtaining it. Consideration must also be given on how best to balance users' needs for transparency on dynamic hedging activity and preparers' commercial sensitivities. Accordingly, the staff have developed 4 disclosure themes for inclusion in the forthcoming discussion paper to facilitate the desired feedback. These disclosure themes are as follows. Qualitative information on the objectives and policies for the performance of dynamic risk management, including the identification of risk within exposures. Qualitative and quantitative information on the calculated risk position and its evaluation on application of the portfolio revaluation approach. How has the entity applied the portfolio revaluation approach? Quantitative and qualitative information on the impact dynamic risk management has had and is expected to have on the performance of the entity. As well as the sort of disclosures that are appropriate, the paper also explores the scope of those disclosures. Traditionally, the scope of disclosures follows that of the scope of the application of the relevant accounting standard. However, it was discussed at the May 2003 board meeting that perhaps holistic disclosures could be used to ensure dynamic risk management is portrayed in a meaningful way in the financial statements if the scope of application of the portfolio evaluation approach was not holistic. Thus, a holistic approach to disclosures and other scope alternatives for disclosures are also presented in the paper. With that, I turn it over to the board for discussion.
outside approach.
Yeah. Jane.
Mary?
In terms of holistic disclosures, even if we did not take a holistic approach to macro hedging, are you saying disclosures based on the type of risk that is dynamically managed rather than the entirety of the portfolio, whether or not dynamically managed?
By holistic in this sense, I mean that portfolios that include the portfolios that are dynamically managed for a particular risk. So if you've got two different portfolios, both have obviously interest rate risk. One portfolio is managed in a dynamic way. Another portfolio might have a similar risk, but is managed completely separately. Perhaps it's managed on a static basis, or perhaps it's unmanaged. By holistically, we mean where the dynamic risk management actually occurs.
So again, the scope of the disclosure is tied to the scope of the accounting, even though it goes to all of the portfolio.
It's actually the scope of the risk management.
Yeah. So what we're saying here is that perhaps the scope of the disclosure would be different to the scope of the accounting. So if, in my example, you had a portfolio for which dynamic risk management was undertaken, but if you were allowed to apply the accounting for macro hedging to a sub-portfolio of that risk-managed portfolio, perhaps that's one answer for the accounting, but perhaps the disclosures would require you to apply them to that whole portfolio that you undertake the dynamic management for. So there could be a difference. I think in the paper we also talk about maybe you should include the other portfolio that I mentioned in my example, just which is where the risk that happens to be managed somewhere else. But I think we felt that perhaps that doesn't give useful information on dynamic risk management if you're including items, you know, discrete portfolios that are not dynamically managed.
I agree with that last part, certainly.
Patricia?
You just raised a question in my mind that probably should have been there before but wasn't. And you said that the disclosures were going to follow the risk management, not necessarily the accounting. And does that mean that if a company does dynamic risk management internally, but they choose not to do macro hedge accounting, they, for whatever reason, decide to just follow the regular hedge accounting model, that we would get the macro hedging disclosures? So one could compare them to another entity that chose to do the macro hedge accounting.
That is a possibility. I mean, I think I don't think in the paper we actually make a recommendation that the disclosures should be different to the accounting. We just raise it as a possibility and want to get feedback on that. But that is certainly one outcome. I mean, you could get, say you've got three different banks perhaps with the same risk profile. One doesn't do any undertake any hedging activity at all. Another one hedges 1%. And another one hedges 90%. You could get three different outcomes. That, you know, the one that hedges nothing at all, perhaps because they don't do dynamic risk management at all, they don't have to do the disclosures. Perhaps the one that only hedges 1%, say, you know, if you follow the risk management holistically, then you have to do all the disclosures, as would the one that hedges the majority of the risk. Because I think there are a variety of outcomes.
But I was thinking of it in the other context. So you have the three banks, three same risk profiles, same hedging activities, but one chose not to apply hedge accounting at all, one chose to apply the regular hedge accounting model, and the third one was applying the macro hedge accounting model. And you get very different reported results. And how are we supposed to be able to compare those as users of financial statements?
You're assuming that it's elective rather than mandatory to apply.
Well, we never made hedge accounting mandatory before, so I would doubt that we would now, but I guess that's an option.
Do we have this situation today with two banks, one opting for not adopting hedge accounting?
Yes, we do.
Of course.
Yes. And that's one of the things that you often hear users complain about, that it's impossible to really compare them or get a sense for why their reporting is different.
Yeah. You also have those who have portfolio hedge accounting, basic hedge accounting, no hedge accounting.
There's a mix, sir.
Stephen?
Jane, to what extent are these types of disclosures already provided? So is there a best practice benchmark for giving interest rate, dynamic interest rate risk management disclosures?
I'm not aware of one.
We discussed it at some point. Sorry, Steve. I guess you mentioned the non-GAAP information around this at some point.
Banks do give some non-GAAP information on their risk management, but I wouldn't say there was a best practice to that.
I mean, you could argue that it comes under IFRS 7. I mean,
limited to financial instruments.
But I think some of the, perhaps.
Daryl?
I'm not sure how much specific detail we'll be going into in the discussion paper. There's a little bit of an overriding concern, if you like, in my mind that, and we've touched on this before in previous discussions, very often the way the banks think about their risk management of interest positions is about thinking about the flows, the actual flows of interest that they're going to receive in the future. The way we've condensed it into the paper and the approach we're taking here is to take, over and above that, at a point in time, the fair value measurement of those underlying positions. But the fair value measurement is a point in time thing. It doesn't actually necessarily tell you that much about the future risk. And it's kind of just making the translation from the one thought process, fair value, into the other thought process, that kind of sensitivity analysis into the future, what is likely to happen to the flows and the like. Tying the two back together, I think, is going to be quite a tricky exercise. And I imagine we're not going to get into that level of detail here.
I think your point around the impact on future income, I think, was in the fourth, can we include that in the fourth theme that we've identified? And I think we will kind of make those points in the discussion paper, but I think, to my mind, one of the big difficulties there is the sensitivities of the banks to, you know, the amount of information that they're prepared to supply on that sort of...
But it does sort of come back a little bit to Steve's point in that I've certainly seen a lot of banks, to be honest, I can't remember off the top of my head whether this is GAAP or non-GAAP, talk about things, for example, the sensitivity to movements in the interest rate curve, sensitivity to movements in interest up and down, that they do talk about already. What banks don't necessarily talk about is the underlying fair value of those instruments, because they're not thinking about this as a fair value exercise, they're thinking about this as a flow exercise. So I think some of the disclosure might be there, either as part of IFRS 7 or other things. I just sometimes get concerned that we start to think about macro hedging as being all about fair value, and it's actually not. Fair value is simply a point in time measurement of something completely different that's happening underneath.
Sorry, what is the difference? I don't follow you.
The way that you're thinking about it from a bank perspective is you're looking forward at cash flows. What are the cash flows that are going to come from one instrument? What are the cash flows that are going to come from the other instrument? And you're thinking about that rolling out through time. How do those cash flows compare to each other? And what you're trying to do is lock in the two streams of cash flows so that you determine what the difference is between them. When we come along and do the measurement we're doing here, what we're doing is we're stopping that, putting a stick in the ground at a point in time and saying, well, what is the fair value of those two different sets of instruments? Mm-hmm. But that fair value is simply telling you what the market valuation is that's placed on those instruments at a point in time. It's not necessarily telling you that much about the differences in the future cash flows that will arise. Now, it does give you a very important balance sheet indicator of how successful your process has been up to that point in time, how well you have managed the risk. But it's not telling you about what's going to flow after that, what the likely risk outcomes are going to be in the future. And I think, as I say, you almost make a transition from the one measurement to the other measurement.
Darryl, just on the sensitivities, I think there is a requirement to include a sensitivity to interest rate changes under IFRS 7. But I think that's that's often like a single number, and it's whether that single number gives enough of a flavour
So I guess part of the point would be, how do you expand on that, and do you say this is what it look, this is what that number looks like before hedging, this is what that number looks like after hedging? It would be useful if we were building on current disclosures rather than adding new ones. But again, I think maybe the question I meant to ask was, we're not going to get into that level of detail, I imagine, at this point. We're simply asking the broad questions rather than trying to drill in on the details.
Yeah, I think that's right.
Okay, is that it? It's time for a break.
Yeah. All right.
Yes, according to the agenda. Okay. We've worked hard today. Yeah.